Hello, everybody. I am Dieter Kalt, and you're listening to 74 Once More, a show for people who are passionate about coaching, who are teachers, mentors, leaders, and love to assist others to succeed, but also try to find ways for themselves to get better in doing what they do every day. Do you want to listen to amazing stories and learn from the experience of extraordinary people who have been there and done that? Stories about experiencing astonishing victories, but also about the struggle to overcome one's deepest fears and most challenging resistance and self-doubt, then you're in the right place, because today's guest is a very special person, an inspiration and a success story in many different ways. She is Colombian, living in Paris, has been traveling the world and been working in five different countries. A rising star in the consulting world, taking on huge clients like the European Commission and the World Bank. Everything seemed to be perfect until something happened that would change her life forever. Now, when I asked her how she would like to be introduced, she stated, "I'm a person now that observes herself, that is connected to her inner being, and wants to spread a message of self-love and care." Natalia Saldarriaga, it's an honor. Welcome to my show.
Thank you for that super intro. Wow. Thank you very much. Honored to be here with you.
Well, you have such a positive glow to yourself, you know, and we've been speaking before a little bit. This is going to be a fun conversation, but about a pretty serious topic, but also about a topic that is supposed to give hope and guidance, because there's a lot of people who are facing the same problems that you were facing. So first question would be, you know, Natalia, what happened that night in Paris?
Yeah, so as you said in the intro, I was working in a consulting company. I was working like crazy. I was a workaholic. I was working 12, 15 hours per day easily. I was barely eating. I was sleeping very badly. I had to meet super tight deadlines. I was working in an environment that was really, really competitive. But it just had that this adrenaline of competition, of I'm winning contracts, I'm negotiating, I'm earning money, I'm having commissions, and it was this adrenaline. So I was married to my job, to my career, nothing else, and I didn't have a healthy lifestyle. So that started like that, and at the same time, it started in 2012 when I started working in the consulting sector, in the consulting world, and then my family was having a hard time as well in Colombia. My father was sick. My sister, she was sick as well. My father, he had three strokes at that moment. So it was very hard for us. And my sister, she has a disease called lupus. I don't know if you know that. It's an autoimmune disease. So she was having a crisis as well. And my father, he was the breadwinner. He was the one that brought all the money to the family. And my sister was not working. She was working with him, actually. So they didn't have any income at that time. My mother doesn't work. So I basically was working like crazy as well to send my salary to Colombia to help them with all the help, all the healthcare. So yeah, that was kind of difficult for me, and I was working, and I was not having I was having problems as well with my husband at that time, and of course he was all right. He was right to tell me, Natalia, you don't have time for us. You don't have time for me. I understand the problems in Colombia, but you have to give us a little bit of time and give yourself time. You're not even resting. And he was saying me, like, I remember he was saying me in French, like, I don't know how you say that in English, but he told me in French, tu n'as pas une hygiène de vie. That means you don't have a healthy life, like a, like a clean life. You don't have that. And I said, yeah. But I just said, yeah. And I kept working. And then that started in 2012. So I kept working like crazy. I kept earning money and earning money and earning money. And it was like this and this and this. And I was growing and growing. Like, I was having a lot of success. I was an extremely high achiever, but I was abandoning myself. I was putting my health on risk. And then that was in 2012. I was working like crazy just until 2014. My father was a miracle. He got well from his strokes. Susanna, my sister, she was stabilized as well. She was stable. And things went better on my family, like according to, yeah, in Colombia, I mean. But I still was having a lot of problems in my marriage. So in 2014, I took the hardest decision in my life. I got a divorce. So it was really horrible for me. Then I kept working like crazy. So that was another excuse to keep working like crazy and being a workaholic.
Probably and more than before.
More than before. Absolutely. More than before. So I said, okay, I'm going to keep sending money to Colombia because my father is just getting better, but he's not ready to work. My sister is not working either. So I'm going to keep sending money to Colombia. And I was not very happy in the consulting sector either. So I was looking for another job as well. So I worked 12 hours in the office. And then I went home to keep working because I was looking for a job. So I never stopped working like crazy, and I never stopped the stressful life I was living. So, and then I got the divorce, and then I thought that the only area of my life that was being successful for me was my job. So that's why I was just focusing on my job, and I forgot everything else. So I was numbing myself with work, basically. And then in 2016, so I did this for 6 years, almost working. And yeah, my body said stop. So in 2016, I was having dinner with some friends, and there were strikes in Paris that night. So there was the public transportation was not available. So there were no taxis, no buses, nothing. So we decided to take a bicycle to get back home. And I didn't have any helmet at the time. With no helmet, I got this bicycle. And when I was on the bicycle, I just fainted. I just lost consciousness. And then I fell and I hit my head with the edge of a sidewalk. So, ding. Mm-hmm. So I hit my head without a helmet. I was not protected. So I had a brain injury. And yeah, it was very serious. But I don't remember. Thank God I was with a friend who told me the story, actually. I don't remember anything of that. Mm-hmm. So I fell down. I woke up in the hospital, and that's the only thing I remember. And I realized that I couldn't speak any of my three languages. I thought I was speaking, but I was not speaking clearly, actually. So, yeah, that's what happened. So I could understand everything, but I couldn't speak. So it was not clear what I was saying. I was like, what are these faces? Like, why are they looking at me like that? Like the doctors and my friends, I was like, what is it? I didn't understand. I was not speaking clearly. So I tried to speak in English, in Spanish, in French. And
nothing came out.
Yeah. Nothing came out, like blah, 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 nothing.
Unbelievable.
And,
oh,
my goodness. And yeah, that's where everything started. So it was in 2016. And then I had like short-term memory problems as well. And yeah, everything started there. So I had to rebuild my life from the accident.
So how do you, if you look back at this about, this is where the transformation started, but did you realize it right away?
Or, no.
You know, did you realize some symptoms or signs along the way? You know, you kept yourself pushing with the work and pressure and go, 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 go. I'm going to be the best and I need this. I need to support. You know, I'm feeling guilty if I let loose, and maybe that's something I want to talk to you about later too. That kind of guilt.
Mm-hmm.
Did you notice anything? This is gonna end up bad if I continue like this.
No, I was in complete denial. Of course, I saw the symptoms, but I was in complete denial. I was like, no, I was not expecting that kind of result or that kind of effect. But no. When the neurologists when they told me they asked me to tell them my story, they said, of course you fainted. I mean, this is the result of the life you were having. So you're having a severe burnout. And I said, burnout? Okay, I knew what a burnout was, but I was not aware that I was going through a burnout. I was like, okay, what is a burnout? What are the symptoms of a burnout? So they explained me, and I said, ah, okay. But I was in complete denial at that moment. I didn't get it at that time. I was having the same the same workaholic mindset at that moment. The only thing I wanted to do was to get better so I could go back to work. That was the Natalia at the beginning. And I was having this victim attitude, like, why me? Why do horrible things happen to me and to my family and the lupus and the strokes? And now I'm, my brain is broken. And so I was like living different stages. But at the beginning, I didn't understand anything. I didn't get the lesson at all.
It's so totally- when was the time, was it a specific moment where you realized I got to do something right now?
There was an aha moment, really. I was just waiting to be better. And I started to get better. Like I started with all my therapies, my speech therapies in English and Spanish and French. So I was like working and training all the time. So I said, okay, I'm getting better. Now I'm speaking clearly. Okay, now I'm ready to work. And then I saw my neurologist. He had to like do different exams. And I said, okay, when am I going to work again? And she said, wait, just answer these little questions and then we'll see when you're going to work again. And I said, okay, give me the questions. Shoot. And she tells me, Natalia, tell me the alphabet. And I was like, duh, A, B, C. And then I couldn't answer. I didn't remember the alphabet. I was like, what? And I was in stress, in panic. And then she said, no, don't worry. 100 minus 7. What's the result? And I said, no, but wait. And I couldn't answer those questions, those basic questions. And I was like, oh my God. And then she told me, you see that you need to do a little bit more work. Don't worry. We're gonna solve this together, but you're not ready to work. And I said, oh my goodness. And that was the moment that I understood the extent, the seriousness of what was happening to me. And I said, I really need to change my life. I really need to change. I can't keep living this way. So that's where the click. Yeah.
But I mean, you were pretty much by yourself and during that time in Paris, right?
My family was in Colombia, but I have friends, but.
But I mean, that was, like you don't just change everything like overnight. Okay. I fall asleep like this and I wake up the next morning, everything is going to be like, this is a process, right?
Uh-huh. That's where everything started. That was the step number one. And then another important moment is that neurologists were not very, very optimistic. They didn't know what to say, actually. And they told me, like, okay, you have 1 year, only 1 year for your brain is going to heal in 1 year. And that's it. Like, don't expect any other improvements after that year time frame. And I said, but wait, I don't even know how to speak. I don't know how to add, subtract. I forgot like the basic things. 1 year is not enough. So I was in panic. So I said, okay. Then I decided to turn my back on all this like negative feedback. And I started listening to podcasts and started reading books. And I found a super therapist in English, Alicia Saba, who helped me a lot. She told me that's bullshit. There's something that's called neuroplasticity and you can do whatever you want with your brain. And that helped me again. So that was another stage. And then she gave me a lot of material about reading, about meditation, about neuroplasticity. She told me about TED Talks, about podcasts. And that was where I really started to understand that I needed to change. So it was like little step by step.
Yeah. Well, the way I get the feeling is, you know, you're using your special talent that you had to become who you were before that accident, which there were, you know, you had to have certain personality, characteristics to be able to climb the ladder in this kind of world, to be extremely focused, you know, smart and push yourself and go. That's a special talent, but it's also really dangerous as you can tell. So, but now you turned and you kind of use that same talent, but in a positive way, you know, to push yourself and not making a conscious decision. This is not going to destroy me. You know, my world is not collapsing. This is like a rebirth. Is that the feeling that you started to get?
Yeah, definitely. I was using the fear as fuel to get out of the situation I was dealing with. And when I had this positive feedback from my therapist, from Alicia, from the podcasts I was watching, when I was enriching myself from these inspirational leaders as Lisa Nichols, as Joe Dispenza, as Brené Brown, a lot in Spanish as well, I said, okay, it's possible. But yeah, I used like this. I've always been a goal achiever, always. And a result, I've always been like, yeah, this result oriented. So I said, okay, I'm going to use this as a project. I'm a project manager. And a project. What does a project manager do? Well, project managers find solutions for when they have challenges. And this is a challenge I'm living. It's my own life, basically. So I'm going to find the
result. Kind of a project, right?
Yeah, kind of a project. Kind of important. And that's how I changed my mindset. But it was still this workaholic Natalia at that moment. But I was using it to invest on me, invest my own energy and my own time. So I started scheduling myself, okay, I'm going to start my day by meditating, things that I had procrastinated that for years. I said, okay, I'm going to do it. I'm going to eat better. I'm going to sleep better. So that's how everything started. It was little step by step, but yeah, I used that goal achiever or high achiever I was to achieve my own results.
But you know what I'm really interested in is, where does this come from? Did you take your time to go back and think about, okay, this is me at a certain age? How did I become that? I'm really interested. How come you had the strength and courage to make this decision to start a transformation when so many other people who are facing the same kind of problems and fears, they know it's there. They have the feeling in the stomach, something is just not right, but they're not able to convert this and to overcome the fears. So looking at your story, how you grew up in Colombia, you were saying you had a pretty privileged life, good family. You grew up in a household where education was a big topic. Mm-hmm. Did you ever have a chance to be like that little girl, or did you have a bigger goal in mind all the way? Your path was clear. You have to please, rather than thinking about yourself.
Wow, that's a very good question. Yeah, it comes from my childhood because, I studied in a bilingual school, for example. So for me, it was clear that the languages was one of my passions. I mean, it is my passion, one of my strong passions. And that's why I wanted to do an international career. When I felt that I didn't have that, I said God, life, come on, universe, you can't take this away from me. Not my languages. Yeah. It's what life was giving me, the hardest lesson. So I could understand that I need to change. But where that does come from, I think it's my childhood. My father, especially my father, he was very demanding. And for example, the highest grade at school was 5. That was the highest grade. And I got 4 or 4 or 5. So I was super, super excited. And I told my father, hey, I got this 4, this good grades. It's 4 or 5. And said, okay, why not a 5? What happened? You can get a 5. You're good enough. You're brilliant. You can get a 5. So there was always this, he was always telling me the highest level, you can be more, you can do more. And I was okay, yes, you're true. That's true. I can do more. I can do more. I can do more. And my parents never treated my sister and I like little kids. They always treated us like adults, like we were adults. So I remember growing up in Colombia, in the 80s, I remember I was watching the news with my father. My father was explaining me the tax reform. And I remember that even my mother remembers that the teachers at school when I was very little, they were impressed with everything I knew. It's wow. And why is she's using this high level language? I was using in Spanish, because I was speaking like my father used to speak. So yeah, that comes from from my childhood. And I was I can always do better, better, better. But it was always this pressure on me that I was playing with myself. Huh? I was
Well, this is really interesting to me, because I come from a totally different background. Mm-hmm. But you know, having kids nowadays, you know, and trying to not treat them like little kids, you know, that starts a baby time. You're like, okay, what do you do? You know, you find out, you know, how much, you know, little human beings are capable of doing at early age.
Incredible.
That you feel ridiculous, you know, like doing this and treating them like they don't understand what you're saying, you know. Absolutely. But at the same time, you know, trying to get the best out of them, or to make them to give them the feeling that they can achieve anything in the world that they want to, and that they can be better, and then not settle with you know, mediocrity. But if you can do it really better, there's this, you know, there's this edge.
The fine line.
Where it's too much, where you think you're doing something good and you're pushing people. And it's the same in, you know, in a sports, when you talk about the team, for example, if you're the coach, and this is, you know, an important topic in this podcast as well for my listeners. You're trying to push people or kids, you know, every age group until the professionals, you know, you try to push everybody to the edge, because mm-hmm. it's the edge that, you know, you go over that border, you know, you get better. If you don't reach it, you know, you're going to stay the same. So this is, you know, but if you do it too much, if you do it to the wrong age, for example, you might just get the result that you never wanted to happen in the first place.
Mm-hmm. I have friends that went through that, for example. They were just so fed up of their parents, like pushing them that they just threw everything away. They just quit. I don't know. I think that there's a fine line. It's the limit is not that clear. And I was always working like crazy. And the thing is that I also had this example of my father working like crazy. He was a workaholic. Definitely. Yeah. Absolutely workaholic. So I had this like role model was that seeing someone, because he was a breadwinner. So he was like the one producing for us. So I was like, yeah, I want to be like my father.
Yeah.
And I had also this feminist problem as well. Like, I don't want to be like the woman depending from a guy, because I saw that in my family, that I don't want to be economically dependent on my husband. So I had all these little, I was programming myself like with the wrong maybe so with the wrong ideas.
You're calling yourself a recovering perfectionist.
Absolutely. No. Recovering perfectionist.
I think that's going to be the title for your first book, probably.
Wow, a book. I don't know. Maybe.
Oh, for sure. I mean, your story is, it's not an everyday story, you know? And even if it is, you know, how many people do you know that are courageous like this to, you know, somebody might say, what are you doing, Natalia? You're throwing everything away that you worked so hard for, you know, you get your shit together, you know, you're going to be fine, you know, tune in here a little bit, tune a little bit there, and then everything is going to be great. You know, the world is just waiting for the next. But you've that myth of perfection a little bit that you're fighting now. Well, I think I lost you. I don't hear you anymore at the moment. Okay.
Can you hear me now?
Yes.
Better?
I think it was a problem on my side with the computer. Something got stuck.
I can hear you very, very well.
I might have lost a couple of seconds. So I'm gonna redo my question. Mm-hmm. Tell me a little bit about that myth of perfection from the side of a recovering perfectionist.
Yeah, I'm a recovering perfectionist, definitely. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Right now? Okay. So, yeah. So, what I understood after the accident, because I started doing like a real inner work, like self-development work, and I understood that I was, like, I look back and I say, wow, why was I making all this effort? Was it for me? Actually, no, it was not for me. And I understood that I was being so workaholic and a high achiever because I wanted the other ones to give me positive feedback. I was asking for approval from the others because I didn't have it myself. So I was asking all this positive feedback and all this I wanted to tell me people to tell me you're worth it. And I was looking for that value in the outside, I know, not in the inside. That was finally my conclusion after all the inner work that I did. So I understood that I want to be perfect, and I was obsessed with perfectionism, and I was a control freak. Still, I'm working on that as well. Because I was broken, because I was just looking for, I was just want to be accepted. So I used to say yes to everything. I used to do everything my boss was telling me, and I didn't set limits because I didn't respect myself, because I didn't love myself. And that for me is perfectionism. Like, society sets perfectionism as a positive characteristic. Like, yeah, you're a high achiever, you have a lot of results, but what's the price for that? I was paying a ridiculous price that it was not worth it. I was putting my own health, my own life at risk because I wanted to be perfect. So that's why I started with this podcast called Perfectionism Mythbusters and with Perfectionists. And I think perfectionism is a myth because nothing helpful happens in perfection land. Nothing. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. The only way you can learn is by making mistakes. But we all mess up and it's okay.
So in the corporate world, mm-hmm. Was there a lot of people like you, or you think there is a way to get the best of both worlds, you know, to find that kind of balance?
It's possible to have that kind of balance, but it's a lot of pressure. So it's, yeah, there were a lot of people like me, like asking for approval or just trying to get a better economic situation but it's possible, but it needs a lot of work and it needs a lot of discipline and it needs a lot of awareness. Like, you have to be aware of that. You need a balance in your life. There are a lot of people that don't have that balance, and that's why we have a burnout, because we're looking for perfection. And it's, the price is too high, but it's possible to find balance. Yes, of course.
But with your mental approach, and that's what I'm going to ask you next, you know, the comparison from high achieving people in the corporate world and in sports, there's a lot of things in common. And that's where I come from, like seeing sports as a school, a perfect school for life, really. The dynamics in team sports, in the groups, you know, dealing with failure, finding that mental attitude, that mindset, and take that into every other situation in life. You know, it's pretty much the same what you're saying in the corporate world, although it's so different. On a human level, it's the same everywhere. So, but how would you compare? I mean, that how did you find that mental approach? To be good in what you were before and then trying to change, because many people are failing in this. And I'm talking about myself, for example. You're living your dream, but the dream has to come to an end just because you're getting older. You can't move as well anymore, you know? Well, this ends, you know? It's not like maybe in some other profession, like like acting or in music, for example. You can do it as long as you can hold your instrument or, you know, hearing, or you don't even have to hear like Beethoven was showing, but you know, there's a natural end to a certain type of career. And then there, you know, comes this day where you have to face the truth, and something has to change because you can't go back to where you were. So, and there's a lot of people struggling with that, you know, and I'm wondering from your side, you know, where you get the strength, how is your mental approach? Do you have a new life goal that you set for yourself where you know, okay, this is the path I'm going to follow because I did it before. Those are the steps. I know I can do this in a different life. How do you approach that?
It's like when I started like knowing myself and getting connected with myself, because I think that's the difference. That's why we work like we work, because we're not connected with ourselves. Yeah. And when I had my accident, it was like live and universe was telling me like, stop it, stop the excuses. So you don't have any more excuses about your job because you don't have any job right now. You need to take care of yourself. You don't have any more excuses of sending money to Colombia because you can't, because you're not working. So like life took me all the excuses I was putting on myself to not to, to face my own problems and my own emotional problems. So I think that the first thing you need to do is to connect to yourself and know what you really want to do. What are your priorities? Mm-hmm. Are you willing to live your life like you're living? Are you willing to pay the price you're paying? Are you willing to sacrifice your family? Are you willing to sacrifice time for yourself? Are you willing to sacrifice your relationships, your friends? Because that's what I was doing. I didn't have time for anything else, only for my job. Yeah. With this fake excuse of I'm helping my family, which is completely ego thing. I was feeling like I was the savior and I just need my family to, I'm going to save my family, I'm going to save my marriage, and I'm going to save my company. And I was just being a babysitter for everyone, but I was not a babysitter for my, I was not being a babysitter for myself. Yeah. So when I understood that, I said, okay, what are the priorities? What are my priorities? What are my needs? And then I put myself on the first of the list because I was not, I was the last one in the list all the time. So I decided I need to invest on my energy, my time, on my health. And then I decided to make a balance. So I was scheduling myself. I was saying, okay, I'm going to use this time for meditation, for example. Yeah. I'm going to buy an oven so I can, for example, prepare easy meals, healthy, but in a short time. So I started to use like these practical tools so I could gain time. Yeah. And then everything like started like falling into place.
You know what, when you, from my experience, when you talk about like almost spiritual stuff, you know, like thoughts about life and goals and happiness and this, you know, in today's world, many times you get looked on like, okay, what is he, you know,
yeah,
what is wrong with you now? Okay. Hey, you know, this is real life. This is not, you know, but do you believe that there's a lot of excuses why something is not possible, you know, but in my belief, you know, it's in many, many ways you can make a conscious decision. This is how I want to be. And this is how I want my life to be. But many people don't believe that, you know, this is, you know, you're part of something that's, you know, you cannot really, you're just a passenger and you go kind of with the flow. What do you think about that? Is there, you know, a moment where it is always this moment where you can say, okay, now stop. What do you think that?
Definitely. And I think that comes from suffering as well. Yeah. You have suffered so much. You're so fed up of the pain, physical, emotional, psychological pain, everything, pain in every level, that at the end you're like, okay, I have to take a decision. I need to change because I cannot keep living like this. I think that the difference is that a lot of people, like, they don't accept their own value, so they don't know they are capable of changing. And that was the first exercise I needed to do. Like, I am worthy enough. And I'm worthy enough in a consulting sector or in a humanitarian sector or in anything I want to do. So I started believing in my own value because I thought I was not worthy. And that was why I was like working like crazy for others, but not for me. And when I understood that, it is possible to make a change, that I have everything to do it. And I have, it was a very spiritual awakening as well, because I started like meditating. And I just, I think that when you're ready, like answers start to appear. So then I got this book, then I got this therapist, then I got these people helping me. Then I got workshops, and I said, well, I think that when you say yes, and when you open your mind, and when you surrender a little bit, because things were so bad at that time for me. Like I said, you know what, universe, God, whatever, higher consciousness, it's there, because I didn't know what else to do. Yeah. I said, okay, I surrender. I don't know. Tell me what to do, because I have no idea. So it was this spiritual part for me that was very important. And answers started to appear. I said, oh, really? Are you kidding me? So it was like, yeah, something spiritual happened to me. And because I, for the first time, I said, I cannot control this anymore. So I stopped for the first time being a control freak. And I said, listen, help me. Show me the way because I have no idea. And then, yeah, things started like appearing.
But how did the world around you react to your transformation?
Not very. That's where like answers starting appearing. Like I was always like nourishing myself with my podcasts, with my books, with my therapists that were very supportive. And that helped me because even my parents were saying, what are you doing, Natalie? What are you playing at? Like, you have a super job. You just need to get better and go back to your job. Because they were seeing, like, from that limited way that they were trying to protect me from the way they were seeing it. So my parents were the first ones to say, what are you doing? What are you doing? What happened to you? Oh, my goodness. Something else happened in your brain. Like, there are other sequels apart from the vocabulary and language. And basic things. They were like, okay, she went crazy. Oh my goodness. So yeah, my family was the first one. My family's family, for example, my relatives. I mean, my aunts, my uncle. They were like, "What the hell are you doing?" Of course, you have like all these people telling you what to do, but that's when you make the difference. That's when you say, "I am worthy enough. I don't want to keep suffering. You are not living my life. I am the one living my life. I'm not going to do what you're telling." And that's where I understood that I learned how to say no, because I didn't know how to say no before.
Yeah.
So yeah, I said, no, I'm going to do this. And I gave myself this opportunity of reinvention. Now I'm reinventing myself because it's possible.
it sounds like you found your place now.
At least I'm allowing myself to do it or to look for it, because before it was not. That was not possible. I needed to fit the mold of the society before. Now I'm allowing myself to do what I want to do. For example, the podcast. For example, my online business right now that I'm creating. I want to give myself that opportunity. But of course, my parents are like, oh my goodness, how are you gonna make a living? You cannot live from that. Of course, they're trying to protect me, but that doesn't mean that has to be true. So the thing is that I decided. Basically, I decided to change the story I was telling myself.
Yeah.
And yeah, that's how.
So what? How do you see yourself in 5 years from now? You know, what's the big picture?
Yeah, like I see myself like a big entrepreneur, like auto entrepreneur. I see myself winning, like earning 15,000 easily euros per year. Like I like to dream like big, and I see myself creating digital products, doing workshops. I see myself like a public speaker. Like our podcasts are going to become viral, and just spreading a positive message, because I think that's where it comes from. Like loving yourself, really. When you love yourself, everything happens differently.
You hear that from a lot of people who became incredibly successful by saying, you know, who is going to be interested in what I have to say?
Oh, absolutely.
What is so special about me? And yet, you know, just the story that people are telling are just so inspiring to millions of others, you know, and especially your story, you know, you're going to be a huge role model for anybody who wants to change. Yes. Yeah,
but
I think
I'm still doubtful. But of course, that crazy voice, it's always there. Like telling me, like, are you sure, Natalia? Are you kidding me? Come on.
Yeah, but you know, but that's talking about perfection again, you know?
Mm-hmm.
What, you know, success and being successful, you know, first of all, define success, you know? And that's an important question for me. Define success. What is success to you?
I need to quote Philip McKernan. It's a wonderful coach I love. And in London Real Academy, Brian Rose was interviewing him. And that was the question he asked him, what is success and what is freedom for you? And he said something wonderful. He said, like, when you go to your bed at night and you're with this miracle, this little smile on your face, and you go to bed with a peace of mind and you say, shit, I am living. Because what you've done, you're happy with what you've done. Because you have given value to other people. Because what you're doing has, for the first time, makes sense for you. And I think that's successful. It's not money. It's not like being the CEO of a company. It's like what works for you. What makes you happy? What can you do for hours and hours and hours without even feeling that time has passed? Like losing the track of time because you're happy doing it. That's success. And when you do that, everything else starts to work in the way it has to work. So yeah, I can go now to my bed and say, shit, I'm leaving. I couldn't say that when I was working in a consulting company. I was not leaving. I couldn't even smile. Can you smile right now? Are you happy with what you're doing right now? That's success. The abundance is going to come after that. Definitely. That's already abundance.
So if you could turn back time, it's what I'm thinking many times. If I look back at my career, for example, if I only knew what I knew now, what I know now back then, you know, where would you start? What would you do different? Say, like, if you could turn back the wheels of time 15 years.
Listen to yourself. If you want to dance, dance. If you want to act, act. For example, when I was very young, I was very talented acting and doing theater. And of course, my family was, are you kidding me? You're not going to study that. Do what your gut tells you to do. And one other thing is that, yeah, you're pretty, Natalia. Because I thought I was not pretty. Like, not in the inner side and not in the outer side. So that's what I would tell the younger me. Like, listen to your feeling, to your guts, and you are pretty and you are worthy. And everything will change from that. You'll do whatever you want. That'll be the message.
And that's why I think you're going to be an inspiration for many, many people, women and men all over the world, for sure. Because that's the, you know, talking like you are right now, this is authentic. This comes from the heart. And this is what great leaders do. They don't act, you know, they are just themselves and they have the power and everything they need within themselves without feeling special, you know, but they are. So I really thank you. I really thank you for the story. Really thank you for your time and the honesty. This has been a really important interview for me, and you're going to be an inspiration. And also for my listeners, thank you very much, Natalia Saldaliaga.
It's hard to say. I like that name.
No, I like it.
Thank you for being a great host. And yeah, oh my goodness. Questions. Yeah.
Questions. All right. We're going to talk again, Natalia. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Bye-bye.